27th, public hearing on Senate Bill 1050, tape 23, side 1.
Session on House Bill 2050. You all know that there is another bill in the House Labor Committee. It's one of the benefits of being the chairman, House Bill 2658, which is also a bill that deals with something of the same subject matter. Before I call anyone up, I want to bring Mr. Wyman. Dick? Mr. Wyman, for those in the public that do not know, is the counsel to the Senate Labor Committee, and he was involved in the drafting of 1050, and what I've asked him to do, both for the committee and for the citizens in here that wish to testify, is to give a very brief rundown of what the bill is, so if anyone has any questions, maybe after listening to what he says, that you'll have a better understanding of exactly what was done with the Senate. Dick?
Thank you. Richard Wyman, legal counsel for the Senate Labor Committee, representing Senator Groner. Senate Bill 1050 is before you today as another element in the total workman's compensation reform package, which the Committee on Labor, Consumer, and Business Affairs in the Senate developed throughout this session of the legislature. The measure is basically an attack on the hidden or indirect cost of workman's compensation system and proposes changes in the present administrative and appeals structure. Testimony before our committee indicated a growing need to separate the administrative and the quasi-judicial functions created by the law. All parties to a contested claim, the employer, the insurer, and most of all the injured worker, must be assured that the final determination of a claim will be made as rapidly as possible. The consequences of a delayed final determination are both expensive to the employer and disastrous to the injured worker. Data on rehabilitation programs in this and other states indicate that the gap between the injury and the rehabilitation, as that gap increases, the chance of an injured worker returning to work diminishes. After 12 months, there are heavy odds against the possibility that he will ever re-enter the labor market. We are currently seeing a 14 to 18 month gap. For this reason, we proposed in Senate Bill 1050 that the Workman's Compensation Board be freed from the administrative task so that it can devote its full time and energy to hearing appeals from the referee's decisions in contested cases. We believe this will result in timely final determinations and a much earlier entry of the injured worker into programs of physical and vocational rehabilitation. If this is achieved, we can expect reduced costs in the permanent total disability area, as well as a general reduction in the overall time loss compensation. Administrative tasks will be handled by a separate department headed by a director. The decisions of the director are subject to review by the board, and the board retains its responsibility of making final determinations in contested cases. Senate Bill 1050 also remedies another major indirect cost of the current system, the five-step de novo review process. The present appeals process provides for five separate reviews of the evidence in the record. Each of the reviewing bodies hears the evidence de novo and may substitute its judgment completely for the judgment of the body below. It also means that the courts are the final judges on every aspect of a claim, including facts and evidence. We've heard testimony that the courts, in some instances, have taken the workers' compensation laws far afield of the intent of the legislature. When the legislature passed the law, it delegated responsibility to an administrative board, the Workers' Compensation Board. This board is required by statute to be composed of a representative of labor, a representative of management, and a neutral to represent the public. The board is answerable to the legislature, which has the power to review the policies and decisions of the board and correct abuses by legislation. The legislature does not have the power to review or alter decisions by the courts. Therefore, we propose in Senate Bill 1050 that the board render the final decisions on the facts and evidence. Senate Bill 1050 eliminates the power of the circuit courts to review. Review by the circuit courts has resulted in the judges of many different judicial districts, some of whom have little knowledge of the workers' compensation system, second-guessing the workers' compensation board by substituting their judgments on the evidence. Therefore, instead of a three-member board representing the interest of labor, management, and the public, a single judge may make his evaluation of the facts and develop policy. The system cannot bear the cost of inconsistency and delay caused by the circuit courts taking a fourth look at the evidence. By abolishing circuit court review, we have no intention of depriving the parties of judicial review on matters of law. Senate Bill 1050 provides that the Court of Appeals will review determinations of the board on the grounds of substantial evidence and errors of law. This change is consistent with the review exercised by the Court of Appeals in reviewing the decisions of other administrative bodies. The Court of Appeals will serve as watchdog on the board to assure that all decisions have met with the standards of due process and reasonableness and that the decision is supported by substantial evidence. The Supreme Court, of course, may accept review of any compensation case after it has been reviewed by the Court of Appeals. Under Senate Bill 1050, there would be four separate evaluations of the facts in a case. First, by the Evaluations Division. Second, on reconsideration by the Evaluations Division. Third, by an independent referee. Fourth, by the Workers' Compensation Board. The Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court would then review the board's decisions for errors of law and to determine whether the board's decision is supported by substantial evidence. The board will be the ultimate judge of the facts. If the board decision deviates from the intent of the law, the legislature will have the ability to correct the situation by legislation. Presently, the legislature can do nothing but hope that the courts will administer the workers' compensation law in line with that law's intent. By the steps I've mentioned, Senate Bill 1050 will promote timely and consistent determinations of contested cases and thereby early entry of the injured worker into rehabilitation programs. We must remember that the workers' compensation law was passed to benefit the injured worker and not to provide an opportunity for extended and expensive litigation on the same set of facts. When the law was passed, the main responsibility was delegated to an administrative board. Unless the legislature wishes to change that decision and transfer that responsibility to the courts, we must reaffirm that the board shall serve as the final judge of the facts in a contested case, and the court will serve in its proper capacity to review matters of law. We feel that Senate Bill 1050 only reaffirms the original legislative intent of the workers' compensation law. We have watched the compensation laws become more and more a court-administered program with no chance of legislative review. It's time to turn that tide with Senate Bill 1050. And if you have any questions on the bill as it's drafted, I'd be glad to answer those.
Bill.
Rich, have you prepared any kind of a chart that shows the relationship of one to the other?
Bill, it's interesting. I was going to ask to go over to the blackboard and draw a schematic diagram of the board and the director.
In going through the bill itself, I'm not sure that I've got everyone placed in their proper position. In here it says that the decisions by the director are subject to review by the board, and I don't know whether that means administrative decisions or just what kind of decisions. And then, so I would like to see some kind of a chart, an organizational chart, showing how these all tie together. And once we, in the function of the director and the board, is what I'm specifically talking about.
Can you do that for us?
Well, I don't have a chart prepared. Basically, how the statute was drafted, we went through the laws, looked at the laws, and determined what would be sections pertaining to purely administrative responsibilities, and changed in the law, changed the word from board to director, so that it was in the director's power. The director basically has the major powers the director will have will be to administer the program, and this would be that he'll have control over the rehabilitation program at Wilsonville, for instance. He will be have administrative control over the compliance division. The various physical activities of the board, that is, raising the tax, seeing that compliance is met, administering the various funds that are created by it. Section 30 is the section which gives the board the basic policy-making power. It is our intent to leave the policy-making duties in the board, and also the power of the board on its own motion to review orders and rules made by the director. I'm sorry that I do not have a chart describing all the various administrative tasks that would be in the director. Keith Wilson from the Workers' Compensation Board is here, and he might be able to give you a broader idea of what the purely administrative duties of the board currently are, and which of those would naturally be transferred to the director.
I'm sure it'd be real helpful to all of us if we had a 11 by 17 or something.
Now, this, the director will have charge of the evaluation division.
Yes.
He will have charge of the compliance division.
Yes.
He'll have charge of the rehabilitation.
He'll be the ultimate administrator of those. Yes.
Of that. Now, is the referee in the evaluation division? Is that where?
No, the referee, the hearings referee, has been under present policy an independent division, which is comes out of the Workers' Compensation Board's budget, but however they have been an independent body. They will continue to have the same status. They will continue to be their funding will continue to come through the board, but they will retain their independent status.
So
the director has no control either as far as budgeting or policy making over the referees.
So the referee will, in a chain of command type situation, will belong to the board.
Well, the referee, as under our current program, really couldn't be referred to as belonging to the board. They have, of course, once they're appointed, they have can only be removed for cause, so that they do maintain an independence.
Who appoints them?
Well, the board, and it is their budgeting basically comes through the board. But I think you should realize that they have been under our present system more or less an independent group of decision makers. They will continue to be that under 1050, and they'll be continue. Their budgeting will continue to come through the board.
They will have, but the rules, they will have to comply with the rules that are established by the board.
Well, that's currently our situation.
Okay.
They're basically there to make determinations on the facts.
And there's no change in their present status to what is proposed here in 1050?
No, they still have de novo review powers. They may take evidence. And
okay, one more question. If there is new information, once an appeal is made to the appeals court, it's based on the record.
Court of Appeals?
Yes.
Yes.
It's based on the record.
It currently is. Today it's currently based on the record.
Yes, so to the appeals court, but not to the circuit court. Circuit court, new information can come in. It's a whole new ballgame for the circuit court today, is it not?
The worker can make an appearance and enter whatever comments he has.
Okay, well, that's what. But when we shift it over to the appeals court taking this function, he cannot do that.
No, the review will be on the record, and it will be for on the substantial evidence test, which means that the court cannot substitute its judgment for the judgment of the administrative body. However, it can remand it, for instance, if there was not substantial evidence in their opinion to support whatever determination the board came out with. If there's a constitutional violation, that is something like due process, that would be a ground. If there is an error of law, that is, if the board has misinterpreted the terms of the statute as a matter of law, then the Court of Appeals would remand with instructions.
What if at this stage of the game now, the appeal has been made to the appeals court, there has been new information come forward? Is there any way that can become a part of the process? Can it, if this...
It would be on the record that has been created.
No, it's something that once the record has been created...
I understand your question. Well, the board can, under present law, can open a case for reconsideration at any time on its own motion. And I would expect that in that sort of case, if there was new evidence, you would be back to the board and they would given a petition by the worker to reopen the case.
So even under 1050, the board on its own motion can reopen a case?
Yes, they can modify an award at any time, and if the award is decreased, there is full hearing rights under our present law. If the award is increased, no hearing rights, but the award can be modified.
Not having the disadvantage of being an attorney, I don't quite understand all that.
Well, the board, it's not, once the board makes a decision, there's no locked-in waiver of all future opportunities to present evidence or get a modification of your award or a modification of that original decision. It's not a once or nothing sort of shot. There is a continuing jurisdiction of the board over all of its determinations that it's made.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, Representative.
When you say remanded, the Court of Appeals would remand it, that means that it goes back to the board.
It's
the board
back.
Has to open it back up and
yes.
Do it over.
And do it in compliance with the court order. If there's a determination that there's been a mistake of law or a error of procedure, then that would, of course, be entered into the court's opinion. It would be sent back to the board, and the board would have to take into consideration the court's opinion, rehear the case, and comply with the standards. We won't have the situation, though, where the court sends back and says the award should be X amount of dollars, because they're no longer substituting that sort of judgment on the facts. They will be on matters of law will be the types of determinations they'll be making.
If one of the matters of law would be the substantial evidence or a matter of law, right?
Yes.
If they determine that they did not have substantial evidence or enough evidence, then they could also remand it for that reason.
Yes. If the in their opinion, the decision of the administrative body, the board had no had not been supported by substantial evidence, then they would be sent back together. Further evidence and make further findings before they could, the decision would be final and effective.
In the testimony in the Senate, there must have been some input from the Court of Appeals as far as the increased burden on the Court of Appeals. What are we looking at as far as increased burden of the Court of Appeals?
Well, that's really hard to determine, because right now we have, of course, both to the Circuit Court and the Court of Appeals, de novo review by both those bodies. And currently there are a relatively small percentage of cases getting past the circuit court to the Court of Appeals, and of course that's on de novo review. One would expect it to be less. The communications we got from the Court of Appeals is that had we taken the circuit court out and continued de novo review by the Court of Appeals, there would have been a problem with the burden of cases. We did not do that. We gave the Court of Appeals in this bill review on matters of law. And at that point, I think we did not receive any further communication that the burden would be too onerous.
Okay. One other question.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be, I'm hearing from some people, not very many, but some people, regarding the constitutionality of what we are doing in 1050, that is taking away a person's, this is the way, what they're telling me, taking away the person's right to a trial before a jury, or...
Well, there is currently no trial before a jury. It's a trial before a judge.
Well, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Trial before a judge,
right.
Then.
Mm-hmm.
Which we are doing. And I just wonder, was the question raised on the constitutionality of it in the Senate?
Yes, we did. We did look at that. Of course, we're not taking away judicial review. Typically, a decision by an administrative body will be reviewed by the courts on matters of law and substantial evidence. The workers' compensation system has been I hate to use the word anomaly because I think it was clearly the policy of the legislature at that time to provide a court hearing, but if you look at the workers' compensation law as an administrative system, which it is, if it was, for instance, seen in the same light as the administrative process that goes through DEQ or any of our other administrative processes, we would find that the courts are only reviewing administrative bodies on substantial evidence in matters of law. And of course, there are many administrative bodies in the state which the legislature has established to make these kinds of decisions on people's property and personal rights. And in most instances, the legislature has limited the court review to constitutional and questions of law. So what we're doing is not unconstitutional because it would bring the workers' compensation system more into line with what we have in the other administrative systems as far as judicial review.
Do you feel that the statement that you made about what we are doing in 1050 not being unconstitutional, do you feel that that's been clearly established on the record in the Senate proceedings on this bill previously?
Yes. There is judicial review for constitutional questions and substantial evidence, which is the constitutional test for administrative decisions.
Do you feel that question has been clearly answered?
Yes, I think at this point it's a policy question, not a constitutional question.
Thank you.
I've got one more question, Rick. Under 1050, are we cutting out two de novo steps?
Currently?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
We're limiting judicial review to matters of law and constitutional questions, substantial evidence. Currently, we have two de novo hearings, one at the Circuit Court and one at the Court of Appeals.
Keith Wilson?
Richard.
Was here, there he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice to meet the
note. Sure.
Chairman, I'm Keith Wilson, Chairman of the Workman's Compensation Board.
comes to Representative Rogers' inquiry a few minutes ago concerning a chart display of the allocation of responsibility between the board and the director, assuming the passage of Senate Bill 1050. This chart has been handed to the committee, and you'll note that it's entitled House Bill 2658 as amended, but the distribution as displayed on this chart I think is identical under both 2658 in the House version and 1050, which you have before you from the Senate side. Mr. Bill Peterson, one of our referees, is with me, and Mr. Peterson took both Senate Bill 1050 and House Bill 2658, and not with the intention of changing any substantive provision of either bill, but with the intention and the purpose of reorganizing to plainly delineate the responsibilities as provided and contemplated by both bills, and has done some wholesale amendments which are now incorporated in the engrossed version of 1050, which you have before you. I want to emphasize that we made a deliberate effort not to change any of the substantive provisions of the bill itself. It was purely a matter of reorganization, clarification, and legal clarification of amendments and repeals and this type of thing of various sections of the ORS, which we felt were required to avoid conflict. There are, after that very exhaustive study that was made rather hurriedly, but albeit very thoroughly, I think, two or three minor areas which Mr. Peterson has picked up, which might be suggested to this committee as additional amendments. They do not have anything, again, to do with a substantive change or provision of the bill, merely technical matters that the committee may wish to.
Let me do this. You presented the diagram to us.
Yes.
There are some other people here that are going to come and testify. What I'd like to do, they've come a considerable length of distance, and I would like to have them come up and testify, because we're going to go with 45 minutes, and then if we have time today, I'm going to call you both back up here. Okay. Mr. Larry Gilday.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Larry Gilday. I'm an attorney in Eugene. I'm appearing in opposition or against the bill, Senate Bill 1050. I'll make my comments fairly brief. I'm concerned primarily with the appeals procedure which the injured workman has. Basically, now let me emphasize, I'm testifying on my own behalf, and my remarks and observations are based pretty much on my own personal experience. I've been practicing law in Eugene for approximately 15 years. The workman's compensation part of my practice is relatively minor. Our firm probably has no more than 10 to 15 pending cases at any one time. But we have consistently been involved in this area, and I have done quite a bit of work in it. The thing that I think you might want to take into account on this appeals procedure, I'll speak to that briefly, and I want to give you some of the reasons. In 1965, when the House passed out the version of this bill, which ultimately became a new workman's compensation bill, one of the major changes in the rights of the injured workman was to remove the right to a jury trial if he did not get a determination that he liked from the old SIAC hearing officer. Before this law was passed, we had the State Industrial Accident Commission, which appointed a hearing referee or officer who took informal testimony, normally not on the record, or normally no record was made of the proceeding. After his termination, the injured workman had a right to compensation in the circuit court and obtain a trial by a jury on the extent of disability. When the bill originally passed out of the House, it went to the Senate, and the Senate held out for a jury trial for quite a while. And finally, I think it was pursuant to Bill Mischofsky's, who was lobbying at that time on behalf of the bill, pursuant to his request and then some other negotiations, the Senate adopted this de novo review scheme as a trade-off on the jury trial idea. So what you had finally when this bill was passed out of the Senate was a guarantee and the commitment on the part of the Senate and the House, and the House then concurred in the Senate's changes, that instead of a jury trial, we will still give the injured workman an independent review by an elected judge in his own judicial district. That's to say, the circuit judge of the district in which he resides and where the jurisdiction and venue would be. That judge, the idea was, that judge would have the power to review the entire proceeding and exercise his own judicial discretion in determining not only the facts but also the application of law. That was the policy of the legislature, and I mention that particularly because the fellow who explained the legislative intent and how it's being deviated from by the court, I think, is entirely mistaken. The court, the circuit court, and in my opinion, the appellate courts, have construed the workers' compensation provisions very consistently with legislative intent at the time that the bill was passed. We do not have a system in the courts which has resulted in, or which is being resulting in, the court administering this law. The court is applying the law that you people passed 10 or 15 years ago. The Senate Bill 1050 doesn't contain anything which would prevent a court from administering the bill. If a court is able to administer something under the present law, it would be under that law. What it does is prevents the de novo review, which was guaranteed by the Senate amendments to the original bill passed out of the House in 1965. Now, it seems to me that the main reason for eliminating this de novo review, if I understand the employers and the industry's position correctly, is twofold. One is that because of the review proceeding now existing, the administrative cost, both to the Workers' Compensation Board and to the insurance carriers, is high. And therefore, funds are being used for these administrative costs which might otherwise be available to pay the injured claimant. The second reason that I've heard from insurance counsel is that there is a variation of methods by which people arrive at a determination of fact. In other words, all circuit court judges are different, and they may consider different things, and therefore there's no uniformity or consistency in case evaluation, and therefore making it difficult for the insurance adjusters to evaluate the particular claim. The idea then is that we should consolidate the fact finding with the board so that there's some consistency in philosophy and in approach the fact finding. And that precisely is what any claimant would be afraid of, because an injured claimant is not particularly interested in having consistency on issues of fact. And it is very important to the people who are injured and the people for whose purpose this bill is passed to have the right to an independent judicial review by a judge. judge, subject to election, in an election where they can vote in their own judicial district. The thing that seems to me, if you're talking about wanting to reduce costs and reduce administrative costs, I see nothing wrong with separating the functions of the board and having a director. I think basically what the bill tries to do, in a somewhat awkward fashion, is create a policy-making board, such as, for example, school district or school board, and then a director who is supposed to administer that policy, and that's a sound administrative approach. It seems to me you might want to consider, if you want to reduce the cost of the appeals procedure, leaving the board entirely out of the judicial process. There is no logical reason, as I see the function of the board, as I see the appeal process, for having a hearing officer whose decision is appealed or can be appealed to the Workers' Compensation Board, and then having another appeal from the board to any court. Seems to me that a much more logical and perhaps cost-saving approach would be to have the hearing officer for the initial hearing have an appeal directly from the hearing officer to the circuit court, and I think that hearing should be de novo on the record. I think we ought to explain these terms de novo compared to substantial evidence. When we're talking about a de novo hearing, we're talking about a hearing on the record. It's not a hearing at which additional testimony is taken. Let me compare that. At one time before the district court was a court of record in Oregon, you could have a trial in district court and an automatic appeal to circuit court. That was called a de novo appeal. But when you got to circuit court, you start all over. There's no record. You put on all your witnesses. When we're talking about a de novo hearing in this context with the workers' compensation statute, we do not have a de novo hearing in the sense that you put on new and different and additional evidence at the circuit court level. De novo means that the circuit court judge reads the record and evaluates the testimony and the evidence himself. And he is not required simply to support the findings of fact that the hearing officer makes. And that's the kind of de novo hearing that I'm talking about that was the trade-off, if you will, in order to get the Senate to vote for this bill in the first place in 1965. Now, if you're trying to reduce administrative costs, if you're trying to reduce the amount of time that it takes to get a final decision, you're going to get farther by going directly from the hearing officer to the circuit court, letting the circuit judge have a de novo review of the record, and then having a substantial evidence appeal to the Court of Appeals. There was a question asked about what about the time and the docket of the Court of Appeals, and it takes a long time now to get things through the Court of Appeals, unless you're appealing from a conviction in a criminal case, in which case most of them are thrown on the record without an opinion. But where you're appealing in a situation where the court normally renders an opinion, it takes quite a while to get there. And we're going to save you time by eliminating the circuit court, because most circuit courts hear these cases fairly rapidly after the file. I can speak from experience only in the counties near Lane County, Douglas County, and Coos County. Most of the circuit court proceedings, if the parties themselves are ready, will be heard and will follow within 6 to 8 weeks the time the appeal is filed. Most of the delays, incidentally, are not caused by the docket control, but they're caused by the attorneys on both sides who aren't prepared and who have to have more time to prepare a brief. In the Court of Appeal, there's another factor that I think is important from a plaintiff's standpoint. You have to remember the claimant does not have the money with which to retain counsel and to pay expenses. The appeals procedure of the Court of Appeal, if that's the only judicial review available to him, is considerably more expensive than an appeal to the local circuit judge, because you have special Court of Appeals rules with reference to filing briefs. You cannot file the same type of informal memoranda in the court of appeals that you can in a circuit court. You don't have the same opportunity to present your case by argument in the court of appeals as you do in circuit court, because the court of appeals, you're limited by court rule to so much time. In circuit court, you can take whatever time is necessary to develop your argument before the judge. You can take a full day if that's warranted. You cannot do that in the court of appeals. Basically, you're really wiping out and reducing the appeals, the claimant's right to have this judicial review. And so that primarily is the objection I see. There's one other factor that was brought up from Bill Rogers' questions about taking testimony at the circuit court level. Under the law as it is today, the circuit court judge has the power to permit additional testimony on a medical issue. If there's a showing that the testimony was not available at the time of the hearing, or for some reason couldn't be produced, that provision is removed by Senate Bill 1050, thus preventing either party, either the carrier or the claimant, from presenting pertinent medical evidence which was developed or which came to their attention after the date of the hearing. The reason I mention this is you're dealing with workers' compensation in an area where you have injuries to people. Both sides, particularly the claimant, however, is anxious to get this case determined. You wind up, there's a strong effort made on the part of the evaluation section and the Workers' Compensation Board to wait until the medical condition is stationary before you have a determination order entered. That's the first step. Once that's entered, then you ask for a hearing. It is very common to ask for a hearing before your hearing officer, and after that date, and even after the date of the hearing and the hearing officer's opinion, to have medical conditions change. And they all they can change slowly, they can change rapidly. And it's frequently the case that we or the carrier will want to present additional testimony at the time of the circuit court hearing. I was involved in a case in Coos County not long ago in which the insurance carrier, the private carrier, produced or sought to produce additional testimony relating to the psychological condition of the party, of the claimant. That would not have been to the claimant's best interest had the testimony been allowed, but that gives you an example that both sides can avail themselves of that procedure. And the court, the final determining body, ought to have such evidence before it in making its decision. So basically, that's, I think, the situation that I wanted to describe. I believe that the injured workman should have the safeguard of a de novo review in circuit court. He doesn't need it in the court of appeals. I can't see any logic to having a direct appeal from the board to the court of appeals. So if you've only got the court of appeals for judicial review, it may well reduce the number of appeals because most claimants can't afford that type of procedure. But it's not going to give the claimant what I think the legislative intent was, at least in 1965, and that was a fair and complete hearing on a determination of his disability. Basically, Ted, that was what I wanted to present.
Larry, the committee's heard testimony, the same position that you've stated has been stated by some other people before on House Bill 26, or the 58 that we've heard. I guess the thing is that I understand your position that you cannot see any logic in having an appeal from the board to the Court of Appeals. And I guess that you'd have to say that I imagine your position is it's illogical for all the other administrative hearings, whether it's unemployment, Employment Relations Board, or other matter, in which that they have direct appeals. an administrative board to this court of appeals. But I take it that your distinction is because of the personal injury nature of the claim.
Well, sure. That, and, okay, I don't see the logic of it. As I understand the premise of the people who have this bill, who want this bill, we're trying to reduce expenses. If you're trying to reduce expenses, why not eliminate the board? You got three people there, and we don't need them to have to review this hearing officer's record. Why not give the injured workman a chance to have a de novo review by one judge in circuit court? Only, well, you only got one person reviewing the record. Why send it up to the board when we got three people?
Let me ask you this. As another alternative to this that I had thought about for some time and we're going to talk about later this morning, is a workman's comp court, a three-judge panel, that the appeal would go from the hearing officer, it would go to an appellate, it's an appellate court of a three-judge panel that would be the workman's comp court, and they would have a de novo on the record. What would you think about that idea?
I guess I don't see the advantage to that. I'm not against the idea as you define it. I don't see the advantage to that over an appeal to circuit court. I guess my preference, when you're talking about de novo review, my preference is to have one person conducting that review. I really like the idea of a committee decision on facts. I think basically it's a poor way to go. That's why when you have a trial lawyer who's got a real tough decision that has to be made on the tax, they're going to raise the jury every time, because you want the responsibility fixed with the judge. You don't want the collective decision that's going to be difficult to sustain. And I feel the same way on this. I would prefer if I were trying a case, I would prefer to be able to argue before one judge rather than a panel of three. And it's been my experience also that when you have these panels, the tendency inevitably is that they're not prepared when you come up for review. And the circuit court normally is. The judge, at least it's been my experience, the judges normally have read the record, they've read the briefs, the memorandum's been filed, and they know what to ask, and they get right to the point. When you've had a pre-panel review, even courts of appeal, the Supreme Court on occasion, you have a whole bunch of people sitting there, and many of them have not reviewed the record. And frequently, they will assign one person the job of reviewing it, and you take this case and get it prepared, so you can ask some questions of counsel when they get there, and then you have three people making the decision. And so my preference is to just have one person making it really responsible for the decision that came.
Any other questions, Mr. Galdet?
We've got the referee hearing the case to begin with. Just what is done there? That's a single individual.
Okay, the referee really acts as a judge, I guess. The record is made by tape recording presently. It's his job to rule on all legal issues that come up during the course of the hearing. The hearings are quite informal, and normally at a table like this, each side has the opportunity to present witnesses and other evidence. And basically, it's at that hearing where the claimant and the defendant have to present evidence which they want to urge should be the finding. If the evidence is not presented there, you've lost your chance. That's your day in court.
Okay, now this is sworn testimony.
It's all sworn testimony.
You can have anyone that you wish to come testify or whatever.
Yes, and normally the way it's done today, the testimony is limited, as a practical matter, to people who can describe what the injured claimant cannot do, they used to be able to do. In other words, demonstrating the degree of disability, except in your denial cases. In a case where the benefits have been denied, deposition or actually in person in order to establish the causal relationship between the accident and the medical condition.
And as a practicing attorney, what's your personal opinion of the qualification of the hearing notes officers that we presently have, the system as it works there?
I think it's good. You know, I think the hearing officers, by and large, do a very good job, as they are now. I think the system has been working fairly well. I agree that this de novo hearing perhaps overworked. I don't see a need for two or three or four of them. I do see a need for at least one. I think historically the need is justified because of the history of this entire thing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Nelson Zeller?
Accident or what have you. Yes, I've been involved in them.
And
If you follow this line of work,
yeah,
you're going to be damn lucky if, in fact, I got one of them when I was in management.
I wondered if you know, you were involved in an injury or you represented employees that did have or something like that. I just wondered what exactly where you're coming from. I understand.
Where I'm coming from?
Mm-hmm.
As, well, probably with common sense, I wouldn't spend my time down here because I only have one more year working.
Yeah.
And I'll go on pension. But I am recovering from an injury that was done 40 years ago in the logging industry. It was taken care of, and then it fell apart about 5 years ago. And finally, I mean, it went to the point that had to be done.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Dillon.
Gary?
I wonder why, and the question, I'm aiming this question to you, but I should have been asking it to everybody. I wonder why everybody feels like this change in procedure is going to be to the disadvantage of the injured workman. It seems to me like there's an automatic assumption being made that this change, and because we are eliminating the de novo reviews, that's automatically going to work to the disadvantage of the injured workman. And I haven't yet been convinced that that's actually going to be the case. I admit that that's fewer times when he might have the opportunity to have his benefits increased, but I'm not convinced at all that the end result is going to be, the long-term disadvantage of the injured workman. I just wonder if you had any thoughts. Why do you think that the elimination of the mobile reviews the appeals to the circuit court is going to be to the disadvantage of the injured workman? I guess is my question.
Well, as previously stated, it was going to be more costly for number one thing, and when a workman is out of work, he's injured. It isn't long until he's down the drain financially.
It's going to be more costly to him.
I feel it is, yes. Time-wise.
Seemed to me like he'd spend less time.
It could be. I could be wrong.
Well, if I, so could I. Believe me.
I'm not...
I just wanted to get your reaction.
Sure. No, I feel that the individual... If he can be gotten back on the job, that's the first thing to accomplish. But and the quickest way is the best way, usually. Not always. I've seen men punching time clocks that were wearing a cast on their foot to cut down the state industrial's lost time claim. With the doctor's permission.
Okay.
And in some small towns where there is a industry that is the only industry, shall we say, that it's possible to influence judgment sometimes?
Mr. Zeller.
I have reservations about the director as one man, but... as the ultimate, but for the simple reason he is appointed.
Mr. Zeller?
Yes.
Here, if you look at the blackboard, and this is the thing that they're trying to get at. Under the present appeal system, if you look at the bottom of the board, the workman appeals, and then he has a hearing before a hearing examiner. And then he has the right to appeal that to the workman's compensation board. And then he has the right to go to the circuit court. And then he has the right to go to the Court of Appeals. And then he has the right to go to the Supreme Court. And what they're doing is they're eliminating the circuit court position because it's felt that a five-step procedure like that is extremely cumbersome. And so, in essence, they're not replacing this Court of Appeals with the circuit court. All they're trying to do is to make a decision, and what Mr. Gilday and the gentleman here talked before you, the dispute centers around whether the circuit court's going to be eliminated from that appeals process or the workman's compensation board's going to be eliminated from the process. And that's... The Court of Appeals is not replacing any of the other ones.
I follow that.
Okay.
You're taking one step up, as I see it, And it'll be a four-step procedure instead of a five.
And what Representative Wilcox...
In other words, what I'm trying to say is that you got four chances to win or lose instead of five.
And what Representative Wilcox was getting at is he said he hasn't, in his mind, been able to determine why people think that taking the circuit court out of there is going to hurt the claimant anymore.
It may not. It might be better. I could be wrong. I have been many times. But this is my own personal opinion, and this is the way I feel.
Bill?
Now, back to that, following that particular line, you had talked about a man's out of work and he wants to get this thing squared up. Wouldn't you think that taking a step out would speed the process up and accomplish that goal?
It's possible.
Okay.
But I wouldn't say that it's true.
Right. Another thing, you've been in the workforce for a long time. You'd made a comment earlier about the teeth of the cat being the accidents that happen and should work on that. Over this period of years, have you seen an improvement in the work conditions and the safety?
I have seen improvements in work conditions primarily due to, in my opinion, to contract negotiations. I have seen third-step grievances filed to stop the use of asbestos dusts after it had been publicized.
You don't believe that the accident prevention, the compliance is part of it? You don't think that has played any part in cleaning up the problem?
Well, I would say that it has done a great deal, but I would say also that it could do a great deal more. And what I'm trying to say is that some companies have a safety program which is nothing but a paper tiger. It hasn't got a damn tooth in it.
We've had testimony on other bills before us and other matters that indicate that some percentage of accidents that occur and on-the-job injuries that do occur, that this is the fault of negligence on the part of the employee who was injured or some other employee. Now, here we are back to the human factor, and very difficult to take that out of. You just reached the point of diminishing return. Because the employer right now is subject to some fairly severe penalties if they do not maintain a safe place to work. And we have no penalty other than the potential of being fired by the employee who violates some of these of his own accord.
This was very true. Would you believe in the factor that I was requested and required, or another employee who was requested to walk a 12-inch beam that's 20 feet off the ground for about 5 years before they put a safety walk on it? And
fear of height, this they wouldn't have brought me there.
They ended up bitching, but finally got it.
this, however, is not supposed to happen now.
Well, follow.
And this is what I'm saying, is that we have taken a great number of steps, and we're really down to the human equation, almost essentially.
On both sides, the human equation. One over with so many dollars piled up to what you can do with, and they will spend. And when it costs too much over here, they will do it.
We can force the one on the one side to spend the dollars we got. We seem to force the one on the other to comply.
So, I follow what you're thinking.
Yeah.
And having been in management, I know what you're thinking.
I appreciate you coming up here today. You know, as I know that
maybe you think that only because you got a year to grow that it may not be worth your while. It is worth it to come up.
Well, I thought the three-way bill for one session we can't put out. I was Wayne County Labor Council at the time, the president.
Well, I think that most of us remember all this up here, but I think that your assertion about the safety and contract negotiations probably believe that you were correct on that issue.
I hope so.
Where do
you? I believe that.
Gentlemen,
in seconds.
No, Rod.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go outside. I'm just not to you. I have a question that I would like. I would like to get the number of cases that go from the circuit court level up to the court of appeals. How many is
in your file? You've done an orange annual report of the workers' comp board for fiscal year 76. On page 21. Have a summary of monthly statistical reports on fiscal year 76.